When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Here comes a throw home. He's going to be out at home. Oh, what a throw by Soto.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
How we doing? 405, call his wife in. 405 on this Monday morning. And if you are just waking up, you wake up to about as good a sports scene as we've had in this town in a while. As both the Rangers and the Knicks coming off game one wins that, for me, tell you exactly how this series is going to go. I think both wins you take a lot out of. Sometimes there's game ones of a series, and we all know how important game ones are, and you can give me the numbers of odds of winning the series after winning game one. But sometimes you win a game one, and it's just, hey, you won game one, get ready for game two. It's going to be a hard-fought battle. It's this, it's that. And then sometimes you win game one, and it's an indication of how the series is going to go, and you get a feel for what's going on inside the series. And for the Rangers, after game one, they're far better. We knew it going in. Game one solidified it. They are far better than this Washington Capitals team. They have far more firepower. They got goals from the fourth line. They got role players having a huge impact on this game. Defensively, they were tight. I'm not sure how Washington's even going to score with a 38-year-old Ovechkin and really nothing else going for them. A young goaltender, or at least should I say, an inexperienced goaltender going through the playoffs for the first time. And this Ranger team is just far better. You need a big-time performance in this postseason overall from Panarin. He gives you a goal in the first game. It just feels like this Ranger team is far better than this Washington club, and it proved out in game one, and this should be a short series. And for the New York Knicks, the performance in game one, to me, is extremely telling, because we talk about superstars in this league. Well, Embiid, despite tweaking his knee and coming back for the second half, I thought looked terrific and far better than he looked against Miami in the play-in game, and looked like a real problem, and played, for me, about as well as you can see him play over the course of a seven-game series, considering the knee issue, considering everything around him. The idea that he's going to be able to make it through game after game of a series without retweaking that knee again, or being a little bit more like the player we saw against Miami. I just find it hard to believe you're going to get the best of Embiid for a full series, and you got the best of him, I thought, for most of that game one. Never mind Maxey just running all over the place, scoring 33 points, couldn't stop him, couldn't keep him from getting to the basket. Their two best players played about as well as I can expect them to play. And the Knicks superstar, Jalen Brunson, had one of the worst games we've seen him have since Randle went out. And yet, it still wasn't good enough to beat this Knicks team. It still wasn't good enough. DiVincenzo barely played 25 minutes, couldn't shoot, wasn't an impact on the game, didn't matter. McBride stepped up, Hart hit shots late, they out-rebound them at an enormous clip. This team is good enough to win a game against the 76ers when their star player doesn't play well and the 76ers' two star players play about as good as you could hope. That is a sign for me that this Knicks team is better, well-rounded, better suited for this series, and as long as Jalen Brunson doesn't continue to play the way he played in game one, which I don't anticipate. I don't think there was anything special Philadelphia was doing. I know they've got some length. I know they got some size. They definitely impacted some shots. They blocked a couple from behind. But I thought he got off his shot most of the time. I just thought he had an off night. And they were able to go to Deuce McBride, who was clearly one of the storylines of the game, hitting 5 3-pointers. And then you saw in the second half in particular, but Robinson shutting down Embiid. And the defense, those are the two storylines of the game, other than their stars played great, Jalen Brunson didn't, and still they win. Mitchell Robinson's defense on Embiid, and what Deuce has become offensively. I mean, this is a guy nobody expected anything from offensively. Scored 3 points in all the postseason last year. Someone who's flawed offensively, a defensive guy who, you know, hustles and can play some defense, so he'll work inside a Tibbs rotation possibly. But what he's become now, shooting 40% from three-point land, being probably their best, despite Anunoby being this incredible all-world defender, probably kept up with Maxey better than Anunoby did. So his defense is a given. Now he's shooting threes. He's a plus 37 in the game. And this is probably my favorite stat. When you talk about what the Knicks are and the amount of weapons they have and the amount of bench players they have and how much for superior as a team they are overall over the 76ers, every one of the starting five had a negative plus minus for the Knicks. The bench, Bogdanovich, plus 27. You saw him go through a hot streak in the second quarter. Mitchell Robinson, a plus 20. Most of that's defense, hitting big foul shots down the stretch. And Deuce McBride, a plus 37. The bench was the difference in this game. And if you're going to tell me that on a night that Philadelphia got probably the best performance you can get from Embiid over a seven-game series with that knee, and Maxey absolutely killing the Knicks and getting to the basket at will, and the bench is the reason the Knicks overcome it, and the bench is the reason they win and not Jalen Brunson, to me, that tells me that it's going to be a very tough series for Philadelphia. If that wasn't a game they could steal, then you'd have to explain to me how we foresee them getting anything. Now, I'm not saying this is a sweep. I'm not saying they can't lose. What I'm saying is that was a game that Philadelphia has to win. And I don't expect Jalen Brunson to play that poorly. I don't expect DiVincenzo to play that poorly. And I don't really know what other answers Philadelphia has other than Embiid and Maxey, and they played pretty damn well. This Knicks team has no excuses. They should win this series. And both of these teams in the Garden, both these teams that have won 50 games each for the first time since 1994, the President's Trophy winner, the number one overall seed, this Knicks team that has battled through injury, and Jalen Brunson has dragged them to number two in this Eastern Conference. This is about as exciting as a time. Both of these teams win game one and absolutely show, in my mind, that game one is just a pretext of what is about to come, because both of these teams should win this series. And I feel as good about the Knicks as I can after a game one, because I don't expect Jalen Brunson to be that bad again. Jalen Brunson's going to get back to the player he's been the entire second half of the year. And if that's the Jalen Brunson that shows up, I'd like to figure out how Philadelphia is going to stop this Knicks team. 877-337-6666. We got the NFL draft later this week on Thursday as well. You know where I stand on that. The New York Giants need to draft a quarterback. I've been saying it forever. I'm not going to stop saying it. You cannot have faith with Daniel Jones. You cannot believe in a quarterback who's been this inconsistent to flat out terrible over the first 6 years of his career and hang on the idea that he played really well the last game of the regular season against Indianapolis and then one playoff game against Minnesota 2 years ago. That was enough to get him a contract. It's not enough to get him belief over neck surgery, over an ACL surgery. He can't stay healthy. And this year, when he was healthy, he was awful. Backup quarterbacks came in and played better. And yes, the Giants have a ton of holes. And yes, the offensive line's no problem. And yes, I agree with the GM when he tells you they're not one player away. But for me, when you look at the holes of this team, there's one gaping one. And until you plug that one, the other holes really don't matter that much. And the big hole on this team is the quarterback position. They need to figure it out. This is the draft to do it. They're drafting sixth overall. There's going to be four quarterbacks taken probably in the top five, so they have to figure out how to move up. To me, I believe the GM of the Patriots when he says he's open for business. It doesn't sound like anybody else does, but I would be in contact with them, seeing if I can move up to 3 and get my quarterback. Certainly, I'd be talking Arizona for 4. And I know Minnesota's also looking to trade up, but the Knicks have the Giants have something that the other teams, including the Vikings, don't have, which is the ability to offer them the 6th overall pick and have Arizona probably still get, if not the exact player they were drafted for, if it's a wide receiver, one of the top 3 for sure at 6. So they could move back. Yes, they could get more picks from Minnesota. Yes, Minnesota has 2 first-round picks. Yes, they can get more of a big package, sure. But they're not going to be able to get the wide receiver they want. If I'm the Giants, I'm looking to trade up and get my guy of the future and let Brian Daboll and Joe Shane do what they do. Then, of course, there's the Jets, who, for me, it's quite simple. I take the best player on the board who I think impacts this offense. If it's a weapon, if it's a tight end, if it's a wide receiver, if it's an offensive lineman, I'm focused on one thing. Aaron Rodgers and this offense has to be dynamic. I know what the defense is. And the defense could use, hey, listen, they lost the pass rusher. They picked one up in Reddick, but you never have too many. At 10, that's probably the only pick. I mean, you know, can't have too many cornerbacks either. At 10, I don't know what other place they'd go defensively. But for me, it's very simple. Make Aaron Rodgers' life easier. Whether that's Alt, if he falls all the way down to 10, whether it's one of these 3 wide receivers, which I doubt would fall to 10, but possibly. Or if it's the tight end that everybody's raving about, which really, if you look back at the course of Aaron Rodgers' career, he really hasn't had a lot of dynamic tight ends. That might be an interesting dynamic to give to this team and to give to Aaron Rodgers that he hasn't really had a chance to experience. And for me, I love the idea of getting a tight end who's a red zone target, someone who's, you know, got speed, got hands, got the ability. And we've seen the dynamic tight end taking over this league. I mean, it's not the only reason they're in the Super Bowl, but if you look at the 2 teams in the Super Bowl last year, you could argue they've got what? 2 of the top 3 or 4 best receiving tight ends in the sport, both of them. But if I'm the Jets, there's one thing I have to worry about. Making sure Aaron Rodgers works. That's it. That's my whole mind is bent on it. Whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency, which they've done an incredible job in free agency, revamping the offensive line, getting Williams at wide receiver. All I'm focused on is making sure Aaron Rodgers, who likes to speak his mind and cause all kinds of problems and be, you know, counterproductive in my mind, and saying all this nonsense and creating a whole bunch of stuff that's not about winning, which is what he likes to tell this franchise when he speaks on high about what they need to be focused on. I get it. There's a lot of issues with this guy. But for me, there's nothing else to do but make sure it works. And we'll see what happens with 6 and 10 for the Jets and Giants, respectively, come Thursday. But we got playoff games between then. The Mets head to San Francisco after a successful series against the Dodgers, taking 2 of 3. Who cares? They got blown out by 10 runs yesterday. Doesn't matter. 2 of 3, another series win. Yes, they lose Alvarez for what sounds like 6 to 8 weeks. It's a tough injury, mainly because I was hoping to see Alvarez really come into his own. Now, he's been slumping since the first week of the season or so when he was the only guy who started the year on time. But hopefully, it sounds like on Friday, they are getting back a right-handed power bat for the middle of the lineup in J.D. Martinez, which would be nice to see as he heads to Syracuse for a handful of games before hopefully being a player for the Mets on Friday. But it's a tough injury. You've got a pretty damn good backup catcher to fill in the meantime, and hopefully you've got another right-handed hitter. But ultimately, this lineup top to bottom has done an incredible job. The pitching staff has been great. You lose Raley as well on the IL, but this bullpen, whether it's Reed or Diaz or Ottavino, everybody's been so good. I mean, this team is really playing incredible baseball. Plus, you got Lindor waking up from his slumber, hitting big home run left-handed, getting base hits left-handed, and starting to, you know, he had a good series in L.A. And right now, this Met team hit rock bottom right when Gary Cohen told you. And you know what? What you're learning is 5 games into the season is a pretty good place to hit rock bottom. Because they have turned it around since then, and they are one of the hottest teams in baseball. And right now, both teams are pretty damn exciting to me as the Yankees take another series as well. They've lost one series on the year. And they just keep on plugging along, despite the fact Judge has done nothing, despite the fact that the bullpen stinks, despite the fact all the crying from the fan base that seems to be unhappy with the idea this team is 8 games over .500 in first place. We'll get to that as well. There's nothing wrong with Judge, and don't you dare boo him, you idiots.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Mattingly swings and he has a drive to deep right center. It is high, it is far, it is gone. Back to back, Nina belly to belly.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, 425, McMonagle here with you. And we're all pumped up about the Knicks. I know you are. I saw you guys out on the streets after the game. Knicks in 4. Can we relax a little bit? Come on now. We've won one game. We want Boston. Knicks in 4. Out in the streets in full force. Come on now. Go home. Relax. It's a lot more work to be done. We're past this. I relate everything to the Yankees. It's Yankee Hot Stove. I remember being outside of Yankee Stadium after they beat the Cleveland Guardians. And they won, at least they won the series, but still, they beat the lowly, lousy Cleveland Guardians. And I couldn't even get to the train because it was just a madhouse of people going absolutely nuts, climbing up poles, chanting, "We want Houston." It was a crazy scene outside Yankee Stadium. And I remember thinking the same thing I thought when I saw the crowd outside the Garden in the videos. I thought, we're better than this. We're past this. Like, this should not, where, how lowly have Yankee, it's kind of a little bit, it's on the opposite spectrum a little bit, where it's how lowly have the Yankee fans fallen, where despite hating the team and bashing it constantly, beating Cleveland in 5 in an ALDS is enough to go absolutely nuts, where that should not be that big a deal for the New York Yankees. That's a series they absolutely had to win. And for the Knicks fan, it's the opposite, where you're coming up. Like, you're past this. This Knicks team is too good to get this riled up about winning one game. You should be anticipating this victory. That should be a ho-hum victory. That should be a whoof. Man, we just got through it with Jalen Brunson playing terrible. It shouldn't be out in the streets calling on Boston. Which, by the way, you wouldn't see until the next round because this team's earned a 2 seed. Let's act like it. And now looking at what the next round could be, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see if Giannis comes back, but, you know, Dame was incredible. And they walked right over the Pacers, which we all knew. I mean, look, as much as I like this matchup now against Philadelphia, especially after what I saw in Game 1, I mean, the Pacers wouldn't have been much trouble either. Pacers are a young team. Pacers can score. And I understand that's the fear. On any given night, they can drop 130 or something. They've been the best scoring team in the East. But at the same time, they're inexperienced. And I think, even without, I know Game 1 makes it easier, but I thought so going into the series, even without Giannis, I could easily see the Bucks win that series. And they absolutely destroyed him in Game 1. But let's just hold our horses before we get all crazy, taken to the streets about one victory. This Knick team is better than that. We shouldn't be so enthused after one victory. We should let this play out. We got plenty of time to celebrate. There's plenty of champagne to be had. Because honestly, I'm as pumped as I can be after game one. Like, I don't know. I was thinking about this. Would a dominant performance make me feel even more gung-ho or more on? Like, if they just went out and blew the doors off them. Like, from the jump, Jalen Brunson played his best game, and they won by 25 points, and it was never in contention. Would I feel better than I do right now? And I don't know. I honestly don't know. Because the idea of how well Philadelphia played for me, or at least their two stars played, I just don't know how it gets better for them. I don't know where they'll find themselves in a scenario in this series with, you know, what was it, a 12, 13-point lead at one point? And then they come all the way back in the third quarter to take a small lead. I don't know where they'll be in a position in this series where Maxey is playing lights out and getting to the basket at will. Embiid is dominating early on. And then even after tweaking his knee, still probably, in my mind, looked a little bit better than he did against Miami. And Jalen Brunson is awful. And they have the lead in the second half. I don't know when that scenario comes back for the 76ers. And if they couldn't win under those circumstances, I just don't know when they will. Like, all my feet, a lot of the things we worried about as Knick fans about this series all happened. And they still won. So if the biggest fears or the reasons that you gave yourself on how this series could be a failure or a disaster or how the 76ers could beat the Knicks, if most of those things happened and it still wasn't enough to take them down, I don't know how I could feel better. Now, it doesn't mean they'll win. We'll see. But I just don't know. I feel like we're at a point where I don't know how the Knicks... I don't think the Knicks will ever be in a position where they're uncomfortable in this series. Like, I think we'll have, even if they lose game two, like, it depends on how they lose it, barring no injuries. But even if they lose a tight game, you know, by a basket or two later tonight, I'll still feel like they're in control of the series. I don't think they'll get to a point where they're not in control of the series. So just pipe down, relax, wait until they win the damn thing. And let's be honest, at the looks of that next round, you got a good chance to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. So why don't we just hold our horses instead of bing-bonging after game one? Because we know how bing-bonging went. I played that dopey drop a million times for a year and a half. Most of the time mocking the Knicks because that season turned out to be terrible. 877-337-6666. And, you know, we talked a lot about Brunson's struggles. We talked a lot about, obviously, Mitchell Robinson's defense on Embiid, and we talked a lot about the three-point shooting of McBride. And those are the storylines of the game for me. But let's talk about Josh Hart for a second, because as we were looking at John Starks in the crowd, and we were looking at Larry Johnson, and we were looking back at those old teams, and thinking back and hearkening back to 1999, but even more so that mid-90s team. I mean, if Josh Hart isn't a replica and a reminder of what that team was like, I mean, this is a guy who can control a game and feel like, I mean, he played 40-some-odd minutes in this game. And for a long time in the game, could not hit a basket. I mean, he was awful shooting the ball. But Tibbs doesn't take him out. And you know why? Because he has an ability to take over the game. He played 42 minutes in this game. He ends up 4-for-8 from three-point line. But I think he hit his last three in a row. He's a minus five in the game, but 13 rebounds, four offensive, two assists, one steal. And when the game was on the line, despite shooting poorly all game long, what does he do? He hits all those threes. He gets the rebound at the end of the game. And that's why, you know, I don't know. I guess there's some talk out of Philadelphia to possibly starting Reed or playing Reed and Embiid on the court at the same time. Reed's kind of the backup center play him and the backup center, Embiid and the center at the same time on the court to try and help with the rebounding. I just don't know. I don't know if that helps them. I don't know if there's any way to stop the Knicks from rebounding when they get rebounds from everyone up and down this lineup. Like, obviously, Hart is the best rebounding guard in the NBA. And this team is the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA. And Brunson has five offensive rebounds. Like, I don't know if there's a way to try and close that gap for the 76ers. I just don't know if there is. I mean, they're just too good. They lost the battle 50. The Knicks beat them 55-33. I mean, you could argue that's the game right there, especially with the way they were shooting early on in the game. I mean, second chance points. Are pivotal. And so when you look at this game and you see the advantages the 76ers had with the way their stars were playing versus Brunson. And then you look at some of the underlying things, like the role players and the bench, and some of the things they still do great, like defense on Mitchell Robinson in the second half, defense from McBride a little bit, and then still being able to rebound at such a level where they beat them by 22. 22 more rebounds. So you got enough of the Knicks doing what they do, Hart playing the game he played, finding a way to hit the big shots at the end, as well as Maxey going nuts and Embiid looking far better than he did in the play-in game. I just don't see. I just think there's too much going for the Knicks, man. I'm pumped about the New York Knicks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Ball game over. A perfect game. A perfect game for David Cone.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
You know who else didn't get the respect? Just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. You know who else didn't get respect here? Someone who deserves a ton of credit for what's going on with the Knicks. And that's obviously the head coach. I mean, Tibbs has done an amazing job this year. And the idea that he is not one of the three finalists, I guess that was announced earlier today. Earlier yesterday, the three finalists for coach of the year. Mark Daigneault with the Thunder, obviously had an incredible season. Chris Finch with the Timberwolves, the same. And Jamal Mosley with the Magic, who had a surprising season. All worthy candidates. But how in the world? I know we're probably a little biased here in New York. But to get the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference, when they lose Randall and Anunoby for a long stretch, and don't just hold on, don't just tread water, but get better and move up in the standings instead of holding on to the 6th seed and not have to be forced to play in the tournament, in the play-in tournament. That's what everyone talked about. Just hang on to, you know, make sure you're at least 6th. I want to play in the play-in. And yet, here they are with the 2 seed. I think Tibbs has done an incredible job considering, you know, we forget Mitchell Robinson because Hartenstein stepped up. But, I mean, what they've gotten out of these players, what he's transformed, what he's transformed McBride into. What Hart has become here. I mean, this has been an incredible coaching job from Tibbs. Incredible. And, you know, him and Leon Rose have done a remarkable job from knowing what this team needs and then being able to implement it. I mean, it's just been... When's the last time you felt this good about this franchise and the hands it's in? I mean, a couple of days ago, or last week, they released that dopey video of the Sopranos, of Tony Soprano and Carmelo Soprano trying to find a place for LeBron James to live in one of the worst, embarrassing videos you could possibly imagine to try and entice someone to join your franchise. That's where the Knicks were, in an abyss for two decades. And Leon Rose and Thibodeau have changed that completely. And I don't know how you have a coach of the year and don't have his name involved in it. He's done an incredible job. I just don't know how you don't have... He's got to be one of the three. He's got to be. What they've done here is remarkable. And they're about to win a playoff series, baby. And then they'll take on either the Pacers or the Bucks, and I feel good about that series too. It's really, I mean, just right now, I feel about as good about this Knicks team as I have in forever. And it feels good. It feels nice. I enjoy it. I like this better than the misery we've had over the last two decades. Yeah, you throw the Rangers in, even the obviously the Islanders in the playoffs lost game one. But that should be a, you know, they're a tough team. They've played really well down the stretch. You expect them to at least make a series of it at the bare minimum. Against the team that I believe is favored to win the entire thing, which is crazy to me that Carolina is favored to win the cup, but they are. But man, oh man, how is Tibbs not in the conversation for coach of the year? Brutal. You know what else is brutal? And I don't usually get into this. I don't care typically. Every once in a while I get pissed off by it. Like when my man Sean Marash boos Giancarlo Stanton on opening day, it pissed me off. I don't know why it did. I was working with him at the time. It pissed me off. There are times I get annoyed by the booing. Most of the time, I don't. Most of the time, I think it's ridiculous. The idea that people don't want to come to play for the Yankees because the fan boo, I think it's stupid. I don't even think it was necessary to have a standing ovation for Lindor. It's helped, I suppose, and I'm always in favor of cheering. I just don't know, mandated by the owner seems silly to me, but whatever. Here's what I'll say. For anybody to show up to Yankee Stadium and boo the captain of the team, the man who has literally dragged this offense to an ALCS 2 years ago, who hit 62 home runs, who's been the best hitter in all of baseball for about 3 years now when healthy, who's him and Cole have literally been the team. He's the captain. He's their best player. He's off to a slow start while the Yankees are winning. While they're winning. If you show up to boo the captain of the team of a first-place team because he's struggling in the first month, you, sir, are an idiot. Now, you bought your ticket. You paid to be an idiot. I mean, now you're an idiot and you have poor money skills. But you paid to be that idiot, so God bless you. I'll never tell you not to boo. But just know you're a moron. And that you prove to all the people around you that you're a moron. Because booing Aaron Judge is moronic. I don't understand. Nor do I care. Nor do I think Judge cares. Nor do I think Judge cares that Soto's getting all this love. Nor do I think he feels like second fiddle. All the nonsense. He's in a slump. Baseball's hard. If you go through the course of his career, even 2022, when he was a monster and hit 62 home runs, you will find a three-week stretch where he was awful. This is the game. It drives me absolutely batty. But you know what? Go ahead, boo him. You bunch of idiots. Go ahead. It won't matter. He'll come out of it. And they're not swapping him in the lineup either. There's no reason to move Soto and Judge. There's no reason to whatsoever. Judge will be fine. He's Aaron Judge, as Aaron Boone said. He's 100% right. The problem is the offense has been shut out three times. The offense hasn't been clicking, but how does it click without its best hitter doing anything? That's the problem with the Yankees right now. And it's not that big of a problem to boo because they're still in first place and won every damn series besides one. The problem is, how could you expect this offense to be at full strength and do what it's supposed to do when their best hitter has done nothing? He's struggling. It happens. But, I mean, go boo him, you dopes. I'll never understand this in my whole life. I just don't get it. We got one fan base practically, you know, causing a traffic and blocking the streets because they won one playoff game, and they got another fan base booing the best player of a team 8 games over .500 in first place. What's going on here? Get your priorities straight. Do I have to tell you all this? Do I really have to tell you all this? You should know this. You're better than this. You're better than this, bud. 877-337-6666. I just saw the story that I just saw the Schwab passed away. Do you remember that show? Stump the Schwab? What was that?
I loved that show.
I loved that show too. What was that, 2004, 2006, somewhere around there? 2008? I think it might have even been earlier than that.
Definitely earlier than 2000. He might have been right with 2004.
Let me double check that. But yeah, Stump the Schwab was fun. Now, he was like a... his name was obviously Howie Schwab. Unfortunately, he passed away. He worked for ESPN for a long time. Like, he was one of the... From what I remember, when they would give him that grandiose introduction of the show, he was like someone who helped form ESPN. And he was good. He knew everything. I used to love Stump the Schwab. That was like a classic, just like, you know, afternoon, nothing going on. I, you know, staying home from college or whatever. I guess college. Let me double check. Yes, 2004. July 8th, 2004 to September 29th, 2006. That's it. 2 years. Stuart Scott was the host. I remember Stump the Schwab. That was like staying home from school, skipping class at Nassau Community College, which was really just 13th grade. I was, you know, I didn't end up going. My dad got sick. I didn't go away. But anyway, it felt like I didn't love going to school. So I probably stayed home a lot and watched Stump the Schwab instead of going to school. It explains a lot.
And Schwab was a local guy. I know he grew up somewhere in New York, and he went to St. John's.
He went to St. John's.
I remember St. John's coming up on the show.
Mm-hmm. Howie Schwab. At the age of 63. Too young. But yes, he went to St. John's. He's from Baldwin, New York. He's a Long Island guy, too.
Do we think he crossed paths with Mike at St. John's?
Well, you know, I was in the original broadcasting program. They didn't even have, they started one. I started there. So I don't know if I crossed paths with him. He's a little, born 1960, he's a little bit younger than me. So I paved the way for guys like Schwab. I mean, he was probably in the broadcasting program. But yeah, I was, the first year they had it, I was there. I went to the University of Florida. Oh no, what? UFC. I went to UFC. Played baseball there. And then I transferred to St. John's. And that's when they started the broadcasting program.
Paul in Buffalo is on the Fan. What's up, Paul?
Big Mac, is there anyone in New York sports having a better time than the legend Matt Rempe?
No.
Comes on the ice, gets a regular shift, has a goal, +2, and gets his name chanted
every time. I mean, listen, the crowd loves him. I get it. And it's funny, too, because, you know, there's been a lot of talk about him and whether or not, you know, he would be, if he's a legit, I don't know how else to put this, a legit hockey player, or, like, is he going to hurt them? He's taken bad penalties. He takes one in the first period of this game. Like, there was a thought that, how much ice time is he really going to get? How impactful is he going to be? And he takes a bad penalty to start the game. And then, yeah, he scores the goal and gets his name chanted. He's on the ice for the second goal as that line scores two goals in the game. Like, he's really been something else. It's been some story, this kid.
He is unbelievable, and they interview, at least the NHL is smart. They interview him between periods. He's got a smile on his face. He has the absolute right attitude. I don't know how anyone cannot root for him. You got to be.
Well, I mean, if you play against him, you probably don't like the elbows to the face.
If you play against him, I guess. But
well, I'm saying, if you're rooting against the Rangers, I think.
For 100 years.
Well, elbows to the face.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I watched Pat LaFontaine get annihilated by dirty hits to the face, and I don't think Rempe is a headhunter, to be
honest.
No,
I know. Well, they said on the broadcast, he's so tall, you don't have to get that elbow doesn't have to come up that high to catch you. But
absolutely. I do have one MSG question. I have budgeted $2,000 if the Edmonton Oilers make it to the Cup Finals against the Rangers. Would that get me in the lower bowl for one Stanley Cup final game if Connor McDavid is the opponent?
Well, I'm just curious, why is that just to see Connor McDavid, or why did
Are you from Edmonton?
Have you been an Oiler?
When the Sabres go out, I pick two teams. I pick the Rangers and the Oilers. I've seen McDavid live several times. He's worth the price of admission.
Sure.
And I can Amtrak from my house in Buffalo to Penn
State. Is $2,000 enough to get one ticket in the lower bowl for a Stanley Cup Finals game against the Edmonton Oilers?
That is the question.
I did not anticipate such a question. I would think probably yes. I would think $2,000 for one ticket, which sometimes people might have a tough time getting off one ticket. And thank you for the call. I would think 2,000 might get, I don't know how close to the ice you're going to get. 2,000 definitely gets you in the building, clearly. I would think 2 grand. I know it's a Stanley Cup Finals first one, in a while. Was it 2014? With a chance, with this team right now, I don't know. But listen, if it's 2,500, you're not going to pony up 500 more, sure you are. Richie in Queens, what's up, Richie?
Chris, how are you? Real quick,
Yes.
I always feel like the hockey playoffs, although that's not my favorite sport, but I get into it in the playoffs.
No doubt.
And everybody says, that's it. That's the number one sport. Well, watching Embiid and Robinson roll on the floor the other day, the intensity of that NBA game, not quite the 90s, but you could just feel it. I thought that was just awesome.
I agree. It was a great game. There was a lot of intensity. The Philadelphia came out hot to start the game, and it felt like that. It really did. They took the crowd out of the game for a little bit, but it definitely had that intensity.
Yeah, and Maxie's one. I've never seen a guy
fast.
It reminds me of Norm Nixon. But
he's fast.
Hey, real quick, too, with the Bowie, I can remember one time when it really bothered me when the Mets got Mays, and I was next to a guy that was like 40 years old, because that's what I was at the time, at 35, I guess.
Okay.
And the guy was just booing him incessantly. I said, how could you do that? He's 41. He's over here. I know his career. Think about his career.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been booing him for 6 innings. You really got to shut up and think about what this guy has been.
Mm-hmm.
And Ocasio, at 41 years old, his career was over, but he gave you 100% when he came to the Mets. And Judge, to boo somebody like him, I just boo people that give no effort, that just don't care. And he is the face of baseball. So to me,
he's one of the two or three faces of baseball. And I don't think it was that bad. And he answered the question fine. He's like, I've heard worse, and I'd do the same. Yeah, whatever. I just want to let people know they're idiots. That's all. I'm not that hung up on it. I just want to let you know that you're a moron. Have a great day. Everybody enjoy. We got playoffs tonight. Islanders. What time, Fleegs? I want you to say it on air. 7:30.
7:30.
Knicks, what time?
7:30.
Enjoy that. We got Knicks and Islanders, 7:30 tonight. Yankees and A's at 1 o'clock. We got Mets out in San Francisco waiting on the Rangers tomorrow. Big week ahead. I'll be on for a 5-hour midnight ride starting at midnight tomorrow morning. Everybody, have a great Monday. Have a great week. I'll catch you at midnight. Morning show next. Warm-up show next. 101.9 FM. WFAN.